Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Web Sleuth Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith, and tonight we have two very, very special guests, Josh Zeman and Rachel Mills. Now, they're the people behind the documentary Cropsey and Killer Legends. They're going to take your calls tonight, and tonight is going to be all about the docuseries, the big hit on A&E called The Killing Season. Now, this was a unique documentary because it's never been done like this before. Josh and Rachel actually went on the road and got into the investigation for an in-depth look into the Long Island serial killings, West Mesa killings, Atlantic City killings. They talked to long-haul truckers and their experience with, quote, lot lizards, which is so degrading. I hate that. The women like to be called sex workers. Now, because these women were mostly sex workers, their murders faded from the public's eye. But thanks to Josh and Rachel, these women could very well receive justice one more time. And let's go to Josh Zeman and Rachel Mills. Welcome, both of you, to Web Sleuth Radio. It's going to be a great night tonight.
Hi, thanks for having
us. Thank you. Thank you for having us back.
I'd like to remind everybody, we are taking your calls. The number is 713-955-0606. We would love to hear your questions. We already have a big, long set of questions here for you, Josh and Rachel. But if you could just, let's just start with how you feel about the show wrapping up. Did you feel like it left some loose ends? Did you feel like it did the good that you wanted? Why don't we start with you, Rachel, and tell us your feelings about the whole show.
Wow, that's a really big question, Tricia. I feel really great about the show. I mean, what started out as an investigation into a rather big serial murder case in Long Island led to going all across the country to look at all these cases. So, you know, it's interesting that now the show's come out. Both of us have been inundated, as I'm sure you have been at Web Sleuth, with leads and tips and people just saying, you know, how angry they are, for one, how much they want justice for these women. We've been getting a lot of tips, and, you know, 99.9% of them will go nowhere, but we never know when that tip will come in that might lead to something. And those are still coming in as much as today. What about
right.
you, Josh?
You know, I think this is the first step in a long process of making the public aware of what's really going on out there. I
mm-hmm.
think it was a learning
mm-hmm.
process for Rachel and I as to how bad it was, and for everybody. You know, tragically, we didn't think it was as bad as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just every rock we kept unturning was a different case. And tragically, just more examples of, you know, the ball being dropped when it comes to these cases.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, we don't want to throw law enforcement under the bus. Like, we totally get it. These cases are really, really difficult to solve, and they only have a certain amount of resources to put in. And we've met some great police commissioners, some great police chiefs, some great detectives. But unfortunately, the system is broken, and that system prevents even the best detectives from doing the job that they need to do. And so we hope that people will be frustrated enough to reach out to their congresspersons and, you know, demand that these murders be counted. I mean, it's just unfathomable to me that, you know, whether it's CSI, I mean, everybody was tweeting us, telling us that CSI, was it CSI or was it Criminal Minds did a Lisk case, you know?
Yes, and, they did.
You know, I didn't get to see it, you know, but I hope that the narrative is changing, and the narrative isn't, you know, that we're solving these cases left and right. The narrative is, hey, there's a lot of reasons why these cases aren't getting solved, and some of them don't have necessarily to do with the killers themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly was unique and different, and it was a thrill for web sleuths to be involved in. And like you said, we're still getting people telling us their theories. And, you know, we just had a guy write me today who said he was in a bar one of those nights and overheard something. I'm going to pass that along. You know, it doesn't stop with the end of the show. It doesn't stop with just because A&E isn't showing fresh new episodes. This continues on for the families of the victims. It's a nightmare. And finally, because of your docuseries, Josh and Rachel, like we said, they finally started to get some of that justice. And for the people who are listening that don't know, there was a police commissioner or police chief that actually quit his job because he didn't want the FBI kind of moving in because they were doing some things that were unsavory. Now, not suggesting that they're the serial killer, but that hampered the investigation for quite a while, right?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, it was really unfortunate. And it was a web sleuther who actually turned us on to really what was going on. This was Hawkshaw. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was right. You know, we all talk about conspiracy, especially nowadays. And it wasn't a conspiracy in which, the police were involved in the actual murders, but it was a conspiracy in that the police were definitely dragging their heels. And that's mm-hmm. a shame. It's kind of unconscionable to me that for whatever reason, somebody would deliberately, prevent these cases from getting solved for whatever reason. I mean, there's at some point, just human decency has to step in and say, you know, I'm going to do everything it takes. And that unfortunately mm-hmm. wasn't the case. But like you said, that's in the past. And right now, our job, we always knew that, I guess we shouldn't say we always knew, but we didn't quite ever think we were going to find the killers in any of these cases. The point was to put the onus in the hands of the public, you know, and it's the public that is going to solve this case. Somebody knows something. We know that. And so now it's up to you guys. You know, we're passing the gauntlet up onto you guys to go down every lead, investigate it. You know, nothing is too small, nothing is too big.
Exactly. You've got to wonder, does somebody out there know something and they may not even realize it? So just even if you don't think it matters, call it in.
Yeah, call it in. I mean, look, today is the anniversary of three of the GB4 being found. And so right now, today, they are, trust me, looking at all leads and doing everything they can. So if there's any time that's going to be the most important where your tip is going to be heard, it is going to be today, tomorrow, the next couple of days. If there's something you've been holding back, you know, call it in. I mean, we do know that Suffolk County PD is going to be inundated with tips, but at this point, I don't care. You know, that's what it's going to take, and one of those tips is going to mean something.
Exactly.
We found something else out today that was really kind of mind-blowing. Right, Rach?
Yeah, you know, Josh and myself have been in correspondence. It's not just Suffolk County, but with the Medical Examiner's Office in both Suffolk County and Nassau. I don't know if everyone knows, but we've known for a long time that the mother of the toddler was never submitted to NAMIS. And we've been pushing for that for a while now and have been going back and forth between Nassau Medical Examiners and Todd Matthews of NAMIS.
Right. And just to give everybody the background, there's two victims who were found along Ocean Parkway. One was a mother. She's known colloquially as Jane Doe number 3. And she was found dumped in Nassau County. It's along Ocean Parkway, but so far south that it's actually in Nassau County. Now, you've heard us speak about it if you're familiar with the show. The child, the daughter, which was a toddler, was actually separated from the mother when she was dumped, and she was dumped in Suffolk County. So to reiterate, the toddler is dumped in Suffolk County, and the mother is dumped 7 miles away, right over the county line in Nassau County. The toddler is in Namus, but as another one of your web sleuthers let us know, field notes, the mother was never in Namus, and we didn't know why, and so that's kind of the background.
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, so extremities, body parts, essentially, of the mother was found in 2011.
In a plastic bag, right?
I don't recall if it was a plastic bag.
It was a plastic bag.
But it was just body parts. There was no skull.
Yeah.
And so, again, for a long time, I'm trying to get this person in through the help of Todd Matthews at Namus and now the medical examiner's office. We just got confirmation, and this is weird. How should I say this? Because this is big.
That basically the point is that this mother is actually,
I was going to say, let's tell them the mother is now in Namus. And
right.
The interesting thing is she has actually been in Namus this whole time because they've linked her DNA, matched her DNA to another victim who we've always known about, Peaches. So now Peaches has been confirmed. Yes.
Yeah, okay, so Peaches is not, we're not talking the toddler, we're talking another victim, right?
We're talking, there's a toddler, and then there's
mm-hmm.
the mother of the toddler
right.
found in Ocean Parkway.
Right.
Peaches
right.
was a victim found
okay.
in Hempstead Park.
Originally not, so basically Peaches was a victim who was dismembered, but not originally believed to be part of the Gilgo Beach murder.
It was just her torso
okay.
found in a Rubbermaid Tupperware. In Hempstead Park.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the point is Peaches is the mother.
Peaches is the mother?
Right. So basically Peaches is the mother of the toddler.
Wow. And so Peaches was moved even further away than originally thought, right? I mean, it's weird that he separated them so distinctly. Doesn't that say something to you, though?
Yeah, I mean, we had Peter come on and say that meant something, but now this is taken even further. So basically,
mm-hmm.
Peaches is found in two places. Peaches was originally found in 1997 in a Rubbermaid tub in Hempstead Park, which is closer to New York City, closer to New York. And now the rest of Peaches' body parts, I guess, have been found in along Ocean Parkway.
They were already found in Ocean Parkway in 2011. We knew that those body parts in 2011 was linked to the toddler, but now no longer are there two different individuals. It's not the mother who was found in 2011 on Ocean Parkway and Peaches. Those two victims are one and the same.
Right.
Are one and the same. Okay. Wow, that is big news, and that is good news to be able to finally solve that mystery because that was just driving everybody crazy. The mother
right.
and Peaches are one and the same. Go ahead.
Right. Well, what that does is that extends the hunting grounds, if you will, further out. So we've got the Manorville Butcher's victim is not just the mother and the toddler. The mother and the toddler, not just Jessica Taylor, not just Jane Doe number 6, but it's also Peaches.
Well, let's back up for a second. So talking about the Manorville victims, there was Jessica Taylor,
mm-hmm.
40 miles away from Gilgo Beach, right? There was Jessica Taylor, and there was Jane Doe number 6. Both their torsos were found within a half a mile of each other in Manorville. Now,
mm-hmm.
move 40 miles to Gilgo Beach area, Ocean Parkway. The toddler was found, I believe it was 150 feet from the other remains of that same Jane Doe number 6. So for a long time, people thought that Jane Doe number 6 and the toddler were mother and daughter, essentially. And that was a
mm-hmm.
very big point of confusion for a long time.
Because he placed them so close to each other.
Right. So
wow.
he was probably doing that to confuse, and that happened.
It worked.
But now that we know that Peaches is the mother of the toddler, we can also link Peaches, most likely, to being one of the victims of the Manorville Butcher,
yeah,
essentially.
It's speculation, but
yeah.
like if you're following the case, you could kind of make that inference. But basically,
mm-hmm.
this kind of changes the paradigm of the Manorville Butcher and kind of extends the
it does.
His dumping sites.
And we found this information out, just to let you know. So we're trying to figure it out ourselves and what this implication is.
That's a lot to take in because you're right. The implications are huge. And that could, I'm thrilled. I knew that was big news. I had no idea what it was. And this, it's shocking, but it's great news to finally have this part of the mystery solved. And like you said, it does change things because obviously this guy wanted to confuse and he really, really did. We do have a caller on the line. Are you ready to take a call?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Let's see. Vicki, you have a question for Josh and Rachel. Go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, I'm big fans of all of your documentaries.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask, aside from the ones that you've identified, are the included in the ones that you've identified, not the ones that you haven't, like the Jane Does and, of course, the toddler, mm-hmm. are they all sex workers?
Except for the toddler.
Right, that's what I said, for the toddler.
I mean, we assume that they are sex workers. We know the GB4 were, obviously.
Yep. Jessica Taylor was.
Jessica Taylor was. Asian male, we assume he was working.
Yeah.
And we assume Peaches was as well.
Right.
As well as Jane Doe number 6.
Yeah, I mean, we are making assumptions, but based it's not just us, obviously. It's law enforcement as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the assumption is somehow all these victims are related to sex work, and that obviously makes sense. I mean, that's the best way that this killer is going to find somebody, or killers, is going to find somebody who's going to get into their car, going to let their guard down, and going to, evade law enforcement. So, I think we can say with some certainty that that's the case.
Have y'all ever set up traps to see if you could, if I missed this, I apologize on the show, but to set up a trap to where you might... where they might contact you and then maybe you could catch them by some remote possibility that way?
Well, I mean, I think we tried a little bit to kind of go online, and to say we posted something to, Backpage,
mm-hmm.
saying that we had information about who this killer may be, hoping that, this killer might, kind of engage. Yeah, and say well, what do you know? It's just kind of fishing. But, the one person that actually who did try and trap him was Kim.
Kim Overstreet.
Kim Overstreet.
Yeah, she was working the same area that her sister Amber was, and for a long time, she was really hoping she would run into him. She may have. Who knows? I mean, and he could be listening to this right now. If I were him, I'd be listening.
Right.
That's what a lot of people think is that. One or both or three or 12, however many people are involved, are watching this very closely. And I agree. And I would think law enforcement would agree. I mean, it's probably got to be a little bit of an ego trip for him. And then to see everybody trying to figure him out,
right.
Unless he's dead, I would guarantee he is watching, don't you think?
I guess so.
Or in prison. Or dead. Exactly.
Okay, well y'all keep up the good work. I'm looking forward to season 2.
Thank you, Vicki.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, Vicki. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, if you would like to call in, now is your chance to talk to Josh Zeman and Rachel Mills from The Killing Season, also Cropsey and Killer Legends. The number to call in Web Sleuth Radio is 713-955-0606. And I'll tell you what, let's take another call. This is Kylie, area code 718. Kylie, what's your question for Josh or Rachel?
Yeah, hi. I watched the whole season, and I noticed that you guys had spoken to a lot of people that were investigating kind of on their own, as well as you. And I just wanted to know that if any of those investigations or leads you had that you gave to the police ended up in any reopening of the cold cases or any linking of unidentified victims or anything like that.
I mean, is that in Long Island? Are you talking about Long Island or talking with all the
well,
cases?
You had the one, the Asian male, for instance, you had someone that had kind of identified a potential victim, and I didn't know if you gave them the information if they had followed through or
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing, and again, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, but it can take a long time for things to funnel through NamUs and to go through all the right channels. So I think one of the important things for us is to get those people who can be vetted as being excluded, essentially, as a possible match. Let's say, for example, Asian male. If they can exclude an individual, I think that's very important to do so.
Oh, yeah. I think that's, a great place to start, obviously. So.
Yeah.
And so was that male was excluded, or?
Well, here's the problem, right?
Yeah.
That male, we can't get his DNA because of Chinese descent.
Oh, okay.
And
they
can't go back to China and get his DNA. So I have a feeling we're trying to actually find another exclusion for Asian male.
Yeah, there's a missing, we've talked about him before, a missing African American, I guess he was a cross-dresser or trans maybe, older teenager who went missing, who I think we would be able to get his DNA.
Yeah.
And
if
for nothing else, exclude him.
Right.
But then no one will be trying. I think his last name is Santiago.
Santiago, right.
Yeah.
It's
kind of unfortunate that so many of these missing people don't have family or anyone actively looking for them that could kind of provide that link.
Well, that's
the
whole
thing.
I think
that if your child went missing while he was a foreign exchange student, someone that was going to school and trying to better their life, their family would, be interested in trying to find out what happened to him or, doing as much as they could to identify or provide ways to identify, a body that could potentially be his.
It's interesting. It's like, and even that was so difficult because we ended up speaking to somebody who I think may have assumed that kid's identity.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Which we didn't include.
We didn't even include it in the show. We got a number and a name for that same kid, and we called him up and we're like, he's like, oh, this is me. And we're like, well, did you go missing?
Oh, wow.
And he's like, did he say no?
He said no. I don't know what you're talking about. His social security number matched up as well, I believe.
And his name matched up.
Oh, okay.
And so the problem is like, then you get into an illegal immigrant scenario where people are assuming other people's names. I mean, when we started to go down the rabbit hole, to law enforcement's credit, it is incredibly difficult. And God forbid you find somebody who doesn't want to be found. Like maybe that kid, he was a runaway because he was trying to get, away and trying not to go back to China.
Right.
It's incredibly hard to try and figure out who these people are. And hats off to any of the web sleuthers who have ever ID'd people and to the network people and to the people that Todd Namus knows, Todd Matthews knows. It is so incredibly difficult. But look,
it's costly, isn't it, the DNA process? Someone has to pay for that.
Yeah. So, that's the whole thing. It's. I guess, in the film world, we even make it seem easier than it is, but it's not.
Yeah, but it's incredibly complex. Yeah, I understand that. I have one other question. So you guys think that Lyft is still active, or at least still around?
Good question. We actually spoke to somebody today who said that they spoke to somebody. I don't know. We're getting small indications that people think Lyft is still active.
Okay.
So, this gets into this whole thing of everybody saying, like, these guys don't stop. These guys don't stop.
Right.
These guys don't stop. We do know that people stop. Bitroff.
Right.
Bitroff was the guy who was found on Long Island with familial DNA. He had killed 2 to 3 sex workers in the 90s and then had a family. Just like Peter said, like, why we went there,
Right,
and like B2K. Yeah, so sometimes they do stop. That doesn't mean they are acting out in other ways, but, and maybe when we say these guys do stop, like I'm saying they stop because 17 years go by and then suddenly they have a heart attack. You know what I'm saying? Meaning like they could stop because they have a family and suddenly they die. And so, yes, that person has stopped,
but they're not always compelled to kill. Other things take over, you know.
Right, something more important in our life comes around than killing.
Yeah, and sometimes that is a family. Crazy
enough.
Yeah,
that can happen. We have a very special guest on the phone right now. This is Missy Kahn. And Missy, welcome to Web Sleuth Radio. Go ahead and speak with Josh and Rachel.
Hi, Josh. Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Hey, Missy. How are you doing?
Hi, Missy.
I'm doing good.
Good.
Go ahead.
No, please.
I was just saying that I just talked to Rachel about an hour ago, as soon as I got the news about Peaches.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wanted to ask you if you've, today is the anniversary of Maureen being found 6 years ago. Have you talked to law enforcement at all? Have they been in contact?
I haven't. My mom did. She called me today, asked me if I have, but I was running around doctor's appointments. So my mom said that she called them, and they said something about, like, they have something they're investigating right now, and that right now they're obviously having new leads and whatever. They obviously don't really tell her much or tell us much, but she didn't know if it was just them trying to make her feel better about them doing something about it. But she was like, it was the first time they ever, like, really actually said something like that. So,
well, let's hope that something does happen.
Yeah.
Josh and Rachel, can you explain how Missy is involved here for those that are listening and may not know the ins and outs of all these cases?
Yeah, actually, Missy, do you want to tell us about Maureen?
Yeah, sure. Maureen was my older sister, and she was very bubbly and a happy person. She wrote poetry. She went missing in 2007, and that's when I got into the world of missing persons. And then, unfortunately, she was found on Ocean Parkway in December of 2010, 6 years from now. I mean, 6 years ago. So kind of got put in the middle of this all.
You know, Missy, I want to ask. There's been a lot of press and publicity about this case. You know, what have you kind of learned from this whole thing, and what can we all learn about how to cover these cases better, talk about them? Like, what do you want the world to know?
That every person counts. It doesn't matter what they've done in their lives, if they are missing or murdered, that should be, you know, the focus, not the focus of what, you know, pertain to them. You know, obviously that's important in an investigation standpoint, but not in the view of if this person mattered or not. And law enforcement working with each other. I mean, I've told you guys about Norwich, Connecticut, and New York fighting back and forth about who is to investigate Maureen's missing persons case. And because they were doing that, they stalled on evidence that they could have got in the first 24 to 48 hours of her going missing.
Right. And actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was what that was one of the things I do want to speak about. So this is something we didn't get to cover, but this is something that you told us after, which there was a lot of infighting about who's going to cover this missing person case. Can you give us a little bit more insight as to what exactly happened?
Okay, so what exactly happened is when Maureen went missing, I contacted New York because I knew for a fact Maureen never left New York. Thus, I had her emails, so her, you know, access to her emails. I knew that she never left New York. So New York said that I had to report her missing in Norwich. It made no sense to me, but I did, you know, we did it. And she got reported in Norwich. Norwich contacted New York and said, listen, she never left your state. This is your case. And they were like, no, she lived in Norwich. So Norwich was like, okay, we'll investigate the case. So we'll go from the beginning. So it stalled, and all of a sudden we had a New York City internal affairs officer come to our house about maybe a month or two later after she went missing to investigate Maureen's missing person. And when we approached that New York officer asking them what Norwich is doing, he had said Norwich doesn't want anything to do with this case. When I was pregnant with my son in 2012, I had a sit down with Norwich, Connecticut, about what they did to investigate my sister's case. And they said that the week that Maureen went missing, they went over to New York in plain clothing to investigate her missing persons because they knew that she never left New York. While they were there, they were being assisted by one New York detective, and they were going through her emails. And while they went through her emails, they found a name, and they like back traced it with the New York City cop that was helping them. And come to find out, they called back and said to Norwich, stop investigating this case right now. Like, now we are taking over this case. And they basically showed up at the coffee house that they were at and escorted them back to the Connecticut line and told them, stop investigating this case. We need all the evidence that you have handed over to us. So
right.
Basically, Norwich was blocked. New York didn't want to investigate it until Norwich found out that one of their own was actually had contact with Maureen that weekend. And that's when they became interested in the case.
Right. So basically what happened was it took a very long time for New York to get involved, and they only got involved after finding out that it was an actual New York City police officer who had been one of the last persons to solicit her, correct?
That's correct.
Right. So
that
person has been cleared, by the way, we should say.
Yes, that person has been cleared.
But it still was a police officer, and that is probably what led to a lot of the hot potato with regards to this case.
Yes, and if it wasn't for Norwich finding out that it was that police officer, there would have never been a New York investigation on Maureen, because
right.
What had happened is it was a missing persons detective that was investigating Maureen's missing persons case for 3.5 years. It was an internal affairs officer that
right.
stood on her case for 3.5 years.
Right. So tragically, you know, these are all the reasons why nobody wants to look at a missing persons case, because they're typically hard to solve. And then on top of it, you know, and this is pretty common that, well, I shouldn't say that. I'm not so sure, but it just seems to happen a lot, is that, you know, police like to solicit women, you know, sex workers. And so, you know, it becomes a very sticky situation.
Yeah. And
yes,
even the sit down with Norwich, Connecticut, the detective explained to me, he was like, we went there on our own time, in our own clothes. He was like, if we were to find anything, he was like, we wouldn't have been able to even be able to submit it. Like, he was like, we were trying hard to work with New York, but they were just like, we're only here to assist, you know? So they were like, it was very hard for them to, you know, investigate it. They couldn't, you know, get warrants to get videos and stuff like that, because they weren't even supposed to be investigating outside of Norwich, Connecticut, and they're outside a different state.
Right. Well, you know, again, it's very frustrating. It's very, unfortunately, typical of what we're seeing. And our point here isn't to kind of, again, throw people under the bus and point out all the bad work. Our point here is to show people that, you know, you have to be diligent. You have to persevere. You have to keep fighting to find out what's going on, because you never know what could be interfering in the case. And thank God your sister had someone like you who was pushing, you know, that there was a family
I can only imagine what would have happened to the GB4 if their families weren't pushing like you guys were. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Right.
I also wanted to say thank you, Josh and Rachel, for doing the documentary series. You guys are the first ones to actually go and stomp your feet in the mud and say, you know, this isn't right. We need answers. These families deserve answers. And I'm forever thankful for that.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for giving us your time as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Missy, thank you for calling. We really appreciate it. And you take care, okay?
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I find it so interesting that it was Internal Affairs investigating Missy's sister's case because it involved a police officer. You know, that to me says he is that they're just worried about their own. You know, why Internal Affairs? That bothers me.
It's complicated, you know, and I think, if you read Coker's book, we do know that one of the last people to solicit her was a New York City police officer. By the way, this is New York City, not Suffolk County. That person was cleared, but, it's at the same time, this is these strange things with regards to serial murder cases, and it's something we do, and when it comes to serial murder, we always go to the police did it. Especially when they're not solved, because that could be the only logical reason. How could somebody evade law enforcement? It must be the police. The only people who can evade law enforcement are either police officers, boogeymen. And so, at least IA was investigating it. But
you're right.
The problem is the missing person cases. The problem is nobody wants to touch a missing person's case. And this is exactly what we heard. This story sounds so familiar. You know why? Because Shannon Gilbert, she goes missing. They fill out a missing persons case in New Jersey. They go to Long Island. They say you have to go back to New Jersey. The Jersey says you have to go back to Long Island. Nobody wants to take that missing persons report. Now, thankfully, and I don't know if somebody can tell me the specifics, but I know that the laws are changing now when it comes to handling taking missing persons reports. But God forbid, if you have a loved one who goes missing and the police tell you have to go back to the the place where it happened or the place where she was from, I would say no, I'm taking this report and I'm not leaving until you take this report, and I'm then going to do the report over there, and then I'm going to call the press to make sure you both do this. You know what I'm saying?
Press is the key. Right.
Scream and yell. Do whatever it takes.
Absolutely. Amen to that. Let's go to another caller. This is Field Notes. Field Notes, welcome to Web Sleuth Radio with Josh and Rachel. You've been on hold a long time. I really appreciate it. So, my dear, you are up. Go ahead and ask your questions.
Hey, what's up, Josh?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Rachel? Congratulations. You guys did it. You guys accomplished your goal.
I can't believe it, right?
That's what you set out. I mean, and it may be lost on some viewers or people not completely familiar with the case. But for those who've been following it from the beginning, you said you might not solve the case, but if we could find something and help identify the unidentified. You know, and you did it. And,
yeah, it's crazy.
And you know what? And you know what? With this case, I have to say, not that I'm all that superstitious, but the dates, it's always on the dates. I mean, they were, the families were at, a vigil for when they found the four girls, and that's when they found Shannon. I mean, and it's here today again. And you got to believe in something, right?
Yeah.
And perfect timing with your show. So it's just congratulations is in order.
Well, let everybody know that you were the one.
Yeah, you were tenacious. I would love for you to just to give a brief overview of your work initially to try to get the mother of the toddler in Namus.
That's right.
It was a long process and a long back and forth and a lot of bureaucracy, or I don't know what it, I don't even know. I mean, how did you guys do it? How did you guys get?
Well, look, yeah, but look, no,
what happened?
Now
what was
you know
the process?
Wait, now you know why she wasn't put in.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, how though? Why? Because she was
now. The reason she
peaches,
was not.
I mean, the torso and the uppers were peaches. And
that's right. That's right. The reason the mother of the toddler was not put in NamUs was because she was already another victim that the police did not want to reveal to the public. She was peaches.
Well, that's an assumption.
Okay, that's an assumption. I apologize to the police. That is an assumption. But they didn't want to put her in because they technically couldn't put her in because then it would link back to reveal that
the medical examiner specifically told me that the detectives will not sign off on it. They told me
that's
that
exactly
from
right.
Nana.
They are not going to sign off because they have a very specific reason why they're not going to sign off, and that's because Jane Doe number 3 is actually peaches.
Right. That's something
right.
I did not.
And the baby's mother. Oh, wait. So they knew that, or they knew that the whole time.
That's
yes.
what. That's what we assume.
Yes, we assume
so
they knew
holding,
that.
So they were
beginning.
Holding it back. They
yes.
were holding it back.
Yes.
That's what we assume.
That changes everything because even with the and it all goes back to Connecticut too because Mamaroneck, right, and the other one Cherries. I'm lost track of them. But
right.
Cherries
Mamaroneck, yeah.
That was found in the Rubbermaid container too, and that was there was a tattoo artist with peaches. Isn't that like back in Connecticut?
Yeah, we did right. So what people don't know and what we haven't even gotten to is the fact that we did a whole separate 10 minutes on peaches because we thought what it was originally linked, but then we couldn't actually make that link.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the A&E website in additional content. Was where we went to Connecticut to investigate peaches. Now,
oh my God!
Well, tell them
you
gotta
have
about,
season two. You gotta have season two.
Tell them about seeing the detective.
Absolutely.
And
right.
You felt that there was
right. So, and here's the other thing is that I spoke to the detective in Nassau County
a year ago
when we were doing that
over
whole
a year
thing.
Ago.
This is the same, and this was featured on America's Most Wanted. You know, I spoke to the detective, and he didn't tell me, but I could tell that there was something he wasn't saying about peaches.
Yeah, there was something he was holding back. He really wanted to tell us.
And he couldn't tell us.
Oh.
Know what it
so
was.
That they were, so the cops were doing the right thing. So they were doing the right thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well,
I don't know.
Is it the right thing not to
know.
Say, you know.
Well, we don't know. Well,
we don't,
right, okay.
But the point was that I think, right, when you say, the, like, I think they knew. They knew that Pete, I mean, listen, I freaking hope they knew.
And that's why I'm calling. I'm annoying. I'm probably like, who is this guy? He's calling.
Right.
Oh,
and,
God.
And maybe
oh, that's
they
funny.
Didn't want to reveal. Or listen, but hold on a second. Maybe they didn't. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah.
You
right,
know,
right, right.
Suddenly
yeah,
Peaches,
sure.
Maybe they're over there going, holy shit, I can't believe it. You know, Peaches.
Well, and when we were putting all these pieces together, at first I thought they had just made
a
mistake. I was like, oh, these idiots.
Right.
They're like
right.
putting like information from the mom onto Peaches. And she's just going to have a combo. Right. What's interesting is the moment it all came together this morning, I'm like, oh, my God, Peaches has a scar from a cesarean. It makes total sense.
And we can really, I mean, we have, like, Webster. I mean, I don't, geez, I'm like, I have no time to do the case right now because of work, but it's just like there's now totally, there's a lot of work to be done.
Right, well, it may not be, that cesarean may not be that baby.
It may not be, but
But on Web Sleuth, I mean, there's stuff to... There's,
oh, yeah,
this
yeah,
open,
yeah.
It changes, everything changes everything.
Well, it does. It changes a lot more than that because now is the Manorville Butcher... If the Manorville Butcher really did drop Peaches in Hempstead, that either makes the Manorville Butcher coming from New York City, you know what I'm saying, that opens that playing field a huge
True.
Amount.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You know how far Hempstead is from Manorville?
There's a ferry, too.
You know, it changes it for me quite a bit.
Everything. I can't even, you know, it's too much to even think about, but that's great. That's great. Great work, man.
Yeah.
Love the series.
So, well, actually, it's not really us. It was kind of you because you were the one who said, why isn't Peaches in there? And why isn't Jane Doe number in there, and yep, there was a legitimate reason why.
You filed up on it. Thank you, but you filed through. You know.
I mean, it's another 50 miles. It's
way.
Like.
Yeah.
Manorville's 40 miles.
Well, I guess that goes to show us that either. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. You know, I'd love to have a police officer say we knew or we didn't know. Either one's fine with me. I don't care. You know, it's just that I think
right.
For those who are playing along at home, it definitely adds quite a new wrinkle.
I think you guys have a way of getting to the bottom of things. So I have faith in you.
Well, let's see.
Can we talk to about the tattoo and getting him?
Yeah, getting on the tattoo, right?
Yeah.
Well, we'll figure out that we've got more to discuss. We have more to get through.
Okay.
But again, field notes. Thank you. You were the reason that this information came out.
Yeah, for sure.
And now this, I don't think any of us really know the full implications. By the way,
mm-hmm.
because if you say, all right, Peaches is tied to Jane Doe number 3. Jane Doe number 3 is tied to the toddler. The toddler
right.
is
tied to
Jane
Doe
number
6
yeah.
by definition of how close she is.
Right.
And Jane
Doe
number
6
is tied
to
Jessica
Taylor.
There's
no way around that. Exactly.
And then, tied to Manorville.
Yeah.
Now, someone might say, it could. There's still nothing to say that it's one killer versus two, but now I start to think.
But,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That is just wild. And field notes, can I just add something? You're
sure.
a perfect example of what we try to do on Web Sleuth is, you know, to
yeah.
get involved and to make a difference. And I want to personally thank you for doing this, for helping Josh and Rachel. You were fantastic.
My pleasure. It's been a pleasure to work with all of you. What's that?
You were on the show in episode 3. We showed you in episode 3. When we did the radio show.
Oh, the radio show.
Yeah. Right.
Not on in Namus. So, like, you know, we've got the proof that it was you.
Yep. And you even said you were like Peaches. We're looking at Peaches. We're looking at all of you. That's You did it. You know, I doubted you for a while, though. Remember? Yeah. I was like, I don't know what you're saying.
Now the question is,
Sarah, good work.
Yeah.
Thank you, Field Notes.
Thank you.
Oh, Josh, go ahead.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Well, there's another web sleuther who we need to talk about. Lindsay Lohan, 6, who's going to want to discuss Tanya Rush and Cherry. But anyway, we're gonna have to deal with that. All right, should we take another caller?
Well, I'll tell you what, we have a bunch of questions that were posted today, and let me get to some of those so we don't forget those people. This comes from J.D. Wills on Web Sleuth, and J.D. posts, the mother of one of the Albuquerque victims stated she picked her daughter up from a jail in Arizona, and on the way home, the victim stated she could not believe they didn't find what was in the gas tank. And J.D. wants to know, did you ever pull the police report to see who was in the vehicle with her when she was arrested? And if you did, were any of the other victims with her? And then J.D. goes on to add, the way the victims were being tied together, smuggling technique, Albuquerque location, suggested a strong tie to possible meth tracking for the cartels. So Josh and Rachel, go for it.
Yeah, it's a great question, and one I immediately had when I heard that as well. I was like, we have to get that police report. Who else is in the car? We did get the police report, and I looked at it today, again, because that was over a year ago, and there were two individuals with her. I won't say the names, but I looked at their...
one with a guy, right? A guy.
Yeah, a guy and another woman. I couldn't track down the woman, but I tracked down the guy just on paper. None of the victims were with her. By the way. But this individual had numerous arrest records for felonies, and it was all cocaine.
Right.
Cocaine and a lot of stolen vehicles.
Right. Now, I would like to bring up a certain point about Albuquerque that I think is really important, which is a lot of people have said, you know, what? You know, come on, cartels don't work like that. Like, cartels lay women out and make a big deal. And it's like, I get it. I get that.
Explain that a little bit more.
Sure. So the idea is that, like, no, a cartel wouldn't have been doing this because why would a cartel go through the trouble of burying these women?
Hiding them
after they've done this. We know cartels. We see it every day on the news. Cartels lay these women out. They're making
political statements by the femicide. And it's like, you know, that's definitely something we thought about. We looked at it, and it's like, but not all cartels work like that. Cartels have different points for, you know, different messages for different things. They were trying to break into that Albuquerque area, and I think these women were more mules than statements. You know, we're not seeing, you know, heads cut off in Acapulco. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that type of messaging. This is more about trying to
silence.
No, I think tying loose ends. You know, this is more just like, you know, drug couriers. But even on the other side of it, you know, this is actually murder for, is serial murder, yes, but it's actually murder for hire serial murder. Dirk Gibson, who could tell you all about that, an Albuquerque native who writes all about that. But the interesting thing here is that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of guys who would end up raping them, you know, before killing them, you know. So it's just because we see cartels act like that doesn't necessarily mean a cartel or an extension of that cartel, which was then linked to a local gang, would do so. To me, I totally got when people were saying that, but, you know, the drug connection is very significant mm-hmm. in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Significant enough that we included it. We just didn't include it for a storyline, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that answers JD's question, and I want to hand out the phone number again for anybody who wants to call in. It's your last chance to talk to Josh and Rachel tonight from The Killing Season. The number is area code 713-955-0606. And let's go to another question now from Web Sleuth. And this one is from Dolly Sod Sojourner. Has there been any updates regarding Joe Foti or the edits to the wiki page? Do you have any follow-up comments about him or your conversation with him? And I do have another question about him as well. So, Josh,
yeah.
Rachel?
I mean, that's a good question. You know, at the end of the day, I don't – first of all, legally, we don't want to say a lot. This was something that I think more than anything was just an indication of a police department that wasn't necessarily controlling its – people, or I think it was just indicative of information that was leaking. It was indicative of lack of discipline. I don't think it was indicative of somebody actually naming, a suspect. Now, that's not what I thought at the time. At the time, we didn't know what to think. But now that's what I think. You know, I will say that, you know, the fact that he was, as a former corrections officer in a power position, that kind of made us think, because, you know, we do know a lot of these serial murders, you know, are in those power positions. But at the end of the day, I think we just wanted to investigate this. And, you know, we very honestly wanted to tell this Foti what people were saying. He had a right to know what was being posted about him on Wiki. And we just wanted to clear up the confusion.
Mm-hmm. And that's all it was. But you have to admit, it was a little odd, and it's amazing that that's what you guys found out. I found that just so surprising. You're looking at it, and one of the people who work with you decides to check, and boom, there it's him making the edit.
It is very interesting, and I think, you know, we included it because we wanted to show people that you can source these clues on the internet, and who knows what it can reveal. I mean, when we saw that, we were very surprised. Now, in some respects, it does make a little sense, because we also know that in the Burke reign, that they were using kind of the internet to spread other false rumors and things like that. So it wasn't out of the question. And I think that was more part and parcel of the Burke regime than anything. But, you know, mm-hmm. I think I want to believe that Suffolk County, and I do believe that Suffolk County is a lot more buttoned up, I hope, and, you know, and that it seems like there's a little movement in this case outside of what we're talking about tonight. I will say that. Things are happening.
Let's hope so. That's great to hear. We got all kinds of good news tonight. That's wonderful. Okay, here's another quick question, and I think this is an excellent question from Pineapple Express on Web Sleuth. How do you propose community trust law enforcement if they are constantly dealing with corruption issues? How do you trust them to help if they are part of the problem? Obviously, not all are bad, but let's face it, it's part of the problem, right?
Such a simple question.
Yeah, that's simple. That
with
answer.
A very difficult answer.
Well, look, I think it requires transparency. I think, I think you hire, you elect, you demand transparency. And those who give you transparency have nothing to hide and therefore should be reelected, appointed, what have you. And those who aren't transparent should be suspect. I mean, you can demand it. You know, you have the ability as the taxpayer and the voter to demand that this happen. I mean, listen, mm-hmm. No county official likes people marching back in front of their homes, you know, and if that's what it takes, then do it, or they call up, you know what I'm saying? By the way, mm-hmm. We met Chief Chitwood in Daytona, who's now, I think, the sheriff's guy in Volusia. He's now the sheriff in Volusia County. This guy was great. He had open Comstat meetings where the public would come in. And you know what? Yeah. A lot of old ladies came in yelling and screaming about their trash cans and their cats, you know, and all this stuff. But hey, you know what? That's the job. Sorry, buddy. You know, and he handled it. He gave out his telephone number. He gave out his cell phone number. Like, this is what this guy does. And so, just like our political leaders, demand transparency.
And boy, that's a great way to do it. He should be an example for everybody, all police officers in this country. What a great guy. That's a good start. That's an excellent start. Okay, we do have another caller. Kathleen is joining us on Web Sleuth Radio. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Good. How are you, my dear?
I'm good.
What are your questions for Josh and Rachel?
The first question I have is the sister of Melissa the only one who's ever heard this person's voice? Because I seem to remember reading an article somewhere that said that the boyfriend slash possibly pimp of Shannon Gilbert had received calls from a guy, and they somehow traced the phone, and it was registered to
Josh, correct me. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, and we.
Hold on a second. I need to confer with my lawyer here. Do
we
want
to? We've switched his regular coffee with Folgers. Will Josh notice a difference? Let's wait and see.
Yeah. Is there really a lawyer there?
No, it's not a lawyer.
I think so. We're conferring together on how to answer this question.
We know the answer to the question.
Oh. What is? Yeah. Wait a minute. I'm not sure I even know the question. I was just trying to say, are they the same guy, or
well, the interesting
have
thing
more than one
that,
person heard his voice.
Right. It's a little bit of a complicated question. So what was his name again?
Blaze.
Right. So Blaze has been quoted. I believe it was just one article that the quote unquote killer had called him and yelled at him and things like that. We do have intel stating that Blaze was called by an individual. We know that individual, and that individual was not the killer. He was getting calls from a family member of one of the victims who was not very happy with him, understandably.
Oh,
and
he didn't okay.
That he coming from the killer.
Or this person was trying to goad Blaze
yes.
into
oh,
the deal.
Oh, okay.
May have happened to
got
this
it.
Woman. And so he was antagonizing and taunting
mm-hmm.
Blaze.
Got it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So the only person that anybody knows of that's ever actually heard the killer's voice is the younger sister.
Yeah, well, and then what we uncovered and other people took credit for, was maybe Sarah Carnes did in fact hear his voice as well if you believe that he taunted her. And we kind of do.
Oh, right.
Right. Yeah, again, interestingly enough, going back to a guy named Dirk Gibson, who is a professor in Albuquerque, who just so happens to have written a book about, what is it, post-murder communications of serial killers. It's a very interesting...
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very, like, I was like, I got to get my hands on this book. It's a really interesting book, and it's basically about how serial murderers love to do this. They love to communicate, and it makes obvious sense. It's it's about narcissism. It's about extending the murder, extending the sadism by once you kill that person, well, I can extend this murder by telling all these horrific things to close relative, you know, the daughter or something like that. So
yeah.
It's crazy, but they like to do it. By the way, just to clear up some more confusion, there is a lot of people think, you know, well, wait a second. The police know what his voice sounds like.
Right.
Tragically, the police never actually recorded the call. And in fact, it was never an official NYPD operation.
Or Suffolk County.
What it was was... friend of the Martinez,
Bartholomew
family, who went in and put a trace on the call. He was a friend, and thank God the guy did it. But it was a trace. It was not a recording.
Wow.
So there's never actually been a recording, and you know there's only one person who has actually ever heard his voice.
Or one, or possibly two.
I apologize.
Yeah. Would she recognize it if she heard it again today?
She says that she would.
She's pretty smart.
Yeah, she is super smart.
She's wicked smart.
Because 6 years ago when this first came out, I submitted a long email tip, but without any identifying information because I didn't want to get anyone in trouble, to Suffolk County, and I think it was through the official like Crime Stoppers thing, and it was so long I did it in two emails, and I never heard anything back. And then I was watching the documentary and saw that there's now like a new chief of police and they're more receptive. And
yeah. Email them back and email us.
Yeah.
What's that?
Email them back and then email us.
Okay. What's your email?
Why don't you send it to me? Do you want to send it to me and then I can forward it to you, Josh and Rachel?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Just send it to Web Sleuth Comments. You know, Web Sleuth, WebSleuths, comments@gmail.com. And we'll get it right to Josh and Rachel. Okay. Any other questions, Kathleen?
No, the documentary was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks
all right,
for
bye.
Calling. Take care now.
Take
bye-bye.
Care.
And remember, you can call in. We don't have a whole lot of time left, about 30 minutes, so now's your chance. Area code 713-955-0606. Are you ready to take another question from a Web Sleuth member?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. This is from Salsa. Have they established if the dismemberment was done for pleasure, as with Hannibal, serial killer of long ago, or was it done for disposal purposes? Regardless, it takes an extremely warped mind to cut body parts of anything, animal or human. I cannot stomach dismembering a bug without feeling terrible. Good question. Have they determined any of this yet?
That's a great question. I don't think it's ever been officially determined whether or not that is the case. There are people like Peter and many others who believe that the dismemberment is more than just a forensic countermeasure. And the reason they say that is because of the way that some of the bodies were displayed. I have not seen the crime scene photos. I am not a profiler, so I'll leave that to the professionals. But what I will say is what I've been told, which is that the fact that, let's say, for example, Jessica Taylor, who was placed like in a somewhat slightly obscure spot, but still somebody knew that, you know, a dog would be walked there, you know, how the torso was kind of displayed on a set of sticks how a body part in Hempstead Park, peaches, for example, although it was in a tub, it was like placed in the middle of the path, or even some of the other body parts. You know, they're kind of hidden, but hidden, but still out in the open enough for somebody to be like, what's this? You know,
mm-hmm.
and apparently that is part of the pleasure of a sadistic torso killer. I mean, for me, it was just the fact that, you know, or let's look at the body part, you know, when you go back to even, you know, torso killers are like the mythical, not mythical, but they're like, you know, the worst case scenario. They really are the Hannibals of serial killing. We have the Cleveland
mm-hmm.
torso killer. We have the Black Dahlia. We have the body that was thrown in Scotland Yard, the Whitechapel murders. So it's very interesting and alluring to think that it was more than just for decide, you know, for again, forensic countermeasure.
I can't imagine that it was just to throw the police off. Somebody to go to that extreme, to those extremes, they have to be able to get something out of it that propels them to continue. This was asked before, but I apologize. I didn't hear the answer, so I'm going to ask it really quickly. Do you think that the Lisk serial killer is still active, or is he gone? Prison, death, whatever.
Jeez. I mean, that's so... How the hell can any of us know until we find another body? And, you know, but...
Well, that's true. There could be another burial ground that we haven't found yet. I mean, it's...
Right.
It's all up in the air. And,
or unless
you
start
communicating
again as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what I'm hoping is that all this attention will convince him to start communicating with somebody, you know, just to get his thrills off, knowing that he's in the nation... fooling the world. So anyway, you're right. There is really no way to tell. A little bit of a different question here. The Freedom of Information Act, since this is an ongoing investigation, would it do any good for somebody to request, you know, the tattoo that would be so helpful if we could get the picture of that tattoo and show it to everybody? Would a Freedom of Information Act work, or since it's ongoing, would they just say forget it?
Now,
which tattoo are you referring to?
The one that they refused to give. It was on. Oh gosh, I can't remember her name.
Jane Doe number 6. Jane Doe number 6.
That's it.
I was just making sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jane Doe number 6. That's it.
I don't. We don't even know if that tattoo actually exists. I'm would say 75% sure.
I don't know
that there is a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
I say 75%.
Yeah, I don't know
that there's a tattoo. I don't think they're going to give it to you through Freedom of Information Act. I don't think it's a bad idea just to go ahead and ask for it. That's never that
mm-hmm.
that big of a problem.
Listen, right now we're trying to find out if that's erroneous information.
I don't know how we're going to find out if that is erroneous.
Well, we're sussing it out, you know, that we have to go back and dig through the journalist reports and find out. So right now we don't, I'm not 100% sure.
That's something. Right. And if she does, that would be a great way to help identify her. You know, that's the thing that's so frustrating.
But I think it's a little bit of two steps, Tricia, is that one, we don't even know she has one. So they would first have to admit
mm-hmm.
publicly again that she would have one. And then
mm-hmm.
two, release it. Now, I know in the case of Jessica Taylor, she had a tattoo. They said she had a tattoo, yet they never publicly released that tattoo. They did it internally and, you know, through different agencies, through different law enforcement agencies, and it just happened to be that missing persons detective in D.C. saw the tattoo and knew it was Jessica Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's actually happened in this case as well. We're not sure. That's a problem a lot. We don't know what law enforcement is doing.
Right. And nor should they really be so – I mean, they should be transparent, but obviously they do have to have holdbacks. I think why we – feel that this case is different is because it was initially fumbled and therefore
mm-hmm.
you know more information needs to be put out. And then, you know, it's been six long years, you know. And
right.
I will say there's a lot of attention on this case right now.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, you have to weigh the good and the bad. You know, you have to weigh, you know, getting IDs with revealing some information.
Right. I mean, you can play devil's advocate. You can say there's a lot of attention to this case right now, today, because
mm-hmm.
it's the anniversary, because there was our show, because there was the People Magazine Investigate show, because, you know, there's a lot of talk around Shannon Gilbert's 911 tape, which is a whole nother thing. So in a way, you would think that law enforcement may want to give some information up that wasn't given before, hoping that because there's so many eyes on the case, maybe it'll generate a lead. But again, I mean, we don't know exactly what they are doing.
We don't.
Exactly. Well, let's go to a phone call. This is somebody that we know on Web Sleuths. This is Shadow Race, and Shadow Race has followed this case, the Lisk case, since day one, I think even before it was on Web Sleuths. And Shadow Race, welcome to Web Sleuths Radio. We love having you here. Why don't you go ahead and talk to Josh and Rachel, okay?
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me. If you can hear me,
hey.
Sorry, my voice is a little bit hoarse. you know, you were talking. It looks like you found a little bit of a clue with Peaches and the baby.
Yep,
great.
I had
clue.
Been looking into that case, that FBI case, because I've been collecting various unsolved murders on Long Island. There's another when that came up. Did they ever try to see if Tanya Rush was connected to any of the unidentified on the beach?
Yeah. So, you know, we've looked at Tanya Rush as well. And, you know, I don't think Tanya Rush, only because wasn't she found whole? Was she dismembered?
No, she was. I thought she was dismembered. It's been a while.
Oh, yeah. Now let's go back. We just relooked at her case. I mean, right. That's what we're saying. So there's Peaches. And then there's Cherries, but I think those two cases are different enough that that's not the case. And, you know, as there's another web sleuther out there will tell you, there's a couple of other dismemberments in East New York. So
right. Well, there's a couple of also a couple of Cold Bay. I've got the name forgotten the name up near Huntington Beach, near Huntington.
Right. 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 So
Cold Spring Harbor.
Right, right, right. So Tanya Rush was dismembered.
That was Cherries.
Right. Now Cherries was the one in
Cold Rush, part of her.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Her.
So
okay.
That was the part that was found in John Dolan's property or something like that. Part of Cherries was. So there's a Lindsay Lohan Six has been definitely looking into this quite a bit. He's been looking into Tanya Rush and a lot of the other murders in East New York. So we should talk a little bit about that a little bit more when we know. I don't know if it's connected to Tanya Rush. I guess the thing that made Tanya Rush so different was the fact that we knew who she was. You know what I'm saying?
Right. They were able to identify her. But she was disposed in her body parts were disposed in a suitcase. So these were who were put in some sort of container.
Yep,
and
right.
Also,
yeah.
She was dumped along 135. I don't see the Southern State Parkway.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
She was dumped along the Southern State Parkway. There are a couple of other cases. The younger, unidentified female teen in 36. I don't know whether she was dismembered or not. And then also Desiree Sherry.
Yeah.
A go-go dancer who interviewed on the Maury Povich show.
That I didn't see.
Yeah.
So, but that's why we're saying that this case, that the fact that Tanya Rush is in fact Peaches opens up a lot more possibilities for a lot more victims and for a wider kind of killing area. So that's why Well, that's why we're now only just kind of realizing the full implications of this.
Well, even though they, even when they connected the Maryville Butcher with Gilgo Beach, that I initially kind of dismissed the ones up at Cold Harbor for Spring Harbor because it would seem so far away.
As
but,
did we.
You know, Matterville is quite a bit further away than those. So then that kind of brings those back into it.
That's right.
That's why the implications
exactly.
of this is so big, because it just widens the area so far. So now we have to go back and take a look at a lot of those cases. You know?
Okay. That's a good thing for web sleuths to do as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been keeping a map of it, but yeah.
Numerous people have been looking. You have. There's some others, and so I think it now opens up a big question mark, you know. But, you know, I think the last thing, I don't know. I want this to help police rather than hurt it. So I don't, you know, we have to see how we can make this a positive thing.
Well, she's in the database. One last question, and I'll let you go on to the next one. Has to do with the pen pal guy.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that he's the person who's posting on Web Sleuths.
Yeah.
And he seems to feel that he was set up
yep.
by you guys.
Yep.
And, you know, so I'm kind of curious what your take is, because he also mentions that the New York Post is stalking him because another person, some of it is kind of odd because, you know, he knows and everybody knows is he's recorded any of his conversations
yeah.
or emails with these people are recorded. So anything that he disclosed in those, you know, the prisons could just alert the local PD. You know, it's not necessarily that the actual so-called killers called.
I'll be straight up fully honest. We had spent a year and a half looking at this case. We had just spoken to a serial murderer who had given us good information about another case that we then passed on. And so if the guy's going to turn around and be like, by the way, I know who the Gilgo Beach killer is, like, you're going to invest, any normal human being would investigate that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, the further you delve, the further you realize, well, wait a second, you know, there's a lot of strange things here. You know, he's corresponding with other serial killers. Like, if any normal person looked at this situation on its face, it would totally, you know, a lot of red flags were going off. And then when we spoke to him and realized that the Suffolk County PD, the FBI, the state police, like, six or seven different law enforcement agencies had also looked at him. So the fact that we looked at him wasn't a setup. I like the guy very much, actually, post, you know, that. I don't say I like the guy very much, but, like, I found him to be interesting. He had a lot of very interesting things to say about our public fascination with serial murder that we just didn't have time to get into. But I also think he liked the police kind of knocking at his door. You know, he got a thrill off that. And so I think, you know, he kind of puts it out there a little bit. He kind of puts it out there and then condemns people for, like, believing it. You know, and so, you know, did we go under there under the pretenses that he may be the killer? Hell yeah. You know, did he kind of put that out there? Hell yeah. And would everybody else do that? Hell yeah. So, you know, I kind of stand by everything that happened.
Yeah, his behavior kind of, it was almost like he was playing, you know, cat and mouse game.
yes.
There's people who write serial killers, and in fact, in my master's program, I had the opportunity to interview. I didn't take it, but I did get the opportunity to interview a few people out here at San Quentin.
Uh-huh.
And it just, like, based on what I was going to have to deal with, I was just going, like, small female and with serial killers. Okay, I'll just kind of pass on that. But
yep.
I really get the whole thing about writing. I think that more people would write if they could figure out how to write without giving away their actual physical location.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that that's necessarily what's raising the red flags. But when you take a look at that he said he wrote all of these letters, and then you have your cameraman is, you know, panning his room that has all of this serial killer stuff literally plastered all over the walls. I think that's the kind of thing that people go, whoa, wait a minute, what is with this guy?
we were joking when we walked out of there. We're like, oh my God, if you had told me, if that had been a movie,
I would not have believed it. I would have said, oh, you guys are ridiculous. That's not how a place is really going to look. And that's how the place actually looked. I mean, it couldn't be more.
Like,
I didn't know if I was being punked or not, you know?
Like something out of a movie set, straight from Hollywood casting. I hear you.
Exactly.
Well, I'll tell you what, Shadow Ray, thank you. Oh, go ahead, Josh. I'm sorry.
No. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, Shadow Race, we love you. You are a tremendous Web Sleuth member and very greatly adored on Web Sleuth for your hard work. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
We have somebody on the phone. Let's see, it's Dub B. Dub B's been on hold for almost 15 minutes. Dub B, welcome to Web Sleuth Radio. It's your time with Josh and Rachel.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Just wanted to say you guys did excellent. I definitely enjoyed the series. Enjoyed and Cropsy was awesome too. That was cool too. I loved all the stuff you guys do. But anyways, what are your guys' thoughts on the Karina Vitrano, I believe her name is, the Grizzly Jogger? Do you think I don't know, it doesn't really fit the profile of the list, but I don't know if you guys had any like thoughts on that as far as
I'm glad you brought it up because, it was strange to me because there was some question about whether or not they could use familial DNA testing, and that's what they used in the Bitroff case. Now, it's a different police department, but, I don't know. I mean, the question is, how do you feel about the use of familial DNA, about whether, and for those who don't know, that's DNA, you send it, you take DNA, you then send it into the system, and it basically gets a hit on somebody who's given their DNA because they've been arrested for a felony crime and then had to get swapped. But in this case, it's also for any of your relatives who have been arrested, swapped for DNA for a felony crime. So, I'm not killing anybody, so,
that's the way I feel. What do you hide, If you're not a serial killer, what are you hiding, really?
Yeah.
I mean, but,
so,
go ahead.
No. I found it strange that they couldn't get the ability to use familial DNA, but then they did. I think they did already.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's just an odd case, and then I don't know if there's any connection. There was a girl in Massachusetts that was a couple of days after that was killed, too, with the same type way. Does it seem like there's a connection you think with that would be? Or you'd probably have to study the case a little more to figure that out. But
I would, but what I can say is I think there's hundreds of women who are – I don't know about hundreds of women, but I think we'd be shocked to find out how many women – are killed out jogging.
Yeah, don't be a runner.
I mean, one of the most famous cases in New York City is the Central Park jogger,
right.
Mm-hmm. So, we spoke to an FBI agent, Mark Stafford, who's very good, and he said, hey, do you have any, what's your one last thought that you'd like to tell the public? And I think he said, people need to be more situationally aware.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like,
I know you want to listen to your music, but like if you're out jogging in the middle of the woods, I'm not blaming the victim. I'm just saying be situationally aware,
No, definitely.
And so
it was a scary, scary
right?
thought with the amount of people that have gone under. I mean, it was when I saw that on the show, I'm still in shock about the amount of serial killers supposedly active. That's crazy stuff.
Well. I mean, that's the problem, right? It's all about we've moved the public conversation from serial killers in the 80s to the war on terrorism. So now those guys are all out profiling terrorists, and now nobody's back on the serial killer tip. So,
I know.
It's kind of crazy out there,
I mean, it's crazy. It's unbelievable. I was under the impression that it was like, something that had kind of a thing in the past, I thought DNA had kind of brought the numbers down maybe of...
The numbers have gone down, but here's the thing, right? The numbers have gone down, but you know what they've been replaced with? Mass murders.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is that back in the day, a lot of a lot of these crimes are about narcissism, right? And so an ego, right? And guys, you know, who wanted to, like, you know, look at Joel Rifkin. The reason why Joel Rifkin says he did what he did was because he was bullied so incessantly that he had such internal anger that when a woman would, like, you know, kind of deny him on the sex side, he'd get so pissed off and he killed her, and then he found that to be extremely powerful.
Right.
So it's a lot, it's about bullying and egos, and then, but now, like, those guys are now the guys who are going out and they realize they can go down in history, not as the unknown guy, not as the, you know, the strangler or the, you know, the Zodiac. Now they're going to go out as, like, the Newton shooter.
Right,
you know?
In a blaze of glory. And I think that has something to say about our culture and the selfie culture that we're in, for sure.
You know, it's about shooting yourself with a selfie before you go on a shooting rampage.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Same trouble, same guys, same issues, you know? But there's not as many serial killers, but hell, there's way more mass murders.
Boy, that's scary. Very scary to think about. We have a lot of people commenting on Twitter and on Web Sleuth about the revelation, the information about Peaches and the baby. In fact, Wasp27 says, Josh and Rach, what do you make of this revelation that Peaches is, in fact, Baby Doe's mother? I'm blown away. She had a family. She went to the tattoo parlor in Connecticut, and the artist remembers her? Question mark. So I think we have just a few minutes. Let's wrap up with something kind of on a positive note that has really put this case in a different way to look at it. We have to study it, see what it all means, and it maybe could lead to the killer. So, Josh and Rach, what do you make of it?
I mean, that's why we were saying before that, like, we're just kind of figuring it out, because if you look at, and that's why I'm like, damn, why didn't we include that in the show? If you go to A&E, yeah, everybody go to A&E, look on the A&E site for The Killing Season, you'll see an extended piece of content that talks about Peaches. And now if we're saying that Peaches is one of the Gilgo Beach victims, and I guess we are saying that.
Yeah.
Because the medical examiner's office is saying that we kind of, you know, in some ways, thank you, Field Notes, you know, we all kind of discussed that all along. And if Steve Cullen really did speak to that woman's, speak to Peach's mom, speak to Peach's son, did that really happen? Do we know?
No, we don't.
We don't. Until
what I find interesting is that we can now, I think, nearly conclusively be confident that Lisk has been working Long Island for 20 years.
Lisk or the Manorville Butcher?
Mom.
The Manorville Butcher.
I guess the Manorville Butcher,
right.
If you believe in two killers.
Right, because Jane Doe,
Because in 1997 is when Peaches was found.
Right.
Is what I'm saying.
And now link that to Jane Doe, Fire Island Jane Doe.
96?
Right.
But are you saying that Jane Doe number... Are you saying Fire Island Jane Doe is Manorville or Lisk?
Manorville, because her body, she was dismembered.
That's the only reason you're...
Well, they were also next, weren't they closer to each other?
Who?
Fire Island Jane Doe
uh-huh.
and Jane Doe number 3 were found not next to each other, but they were found both in Nassau County, pretty close to each other. They were.
Yeah, you're probably right.
They were. So, 96... So, in fact, Fire Island Jane Doe was the body all the way south in Nassau. So that's 96, then one body to the right, 97.
Right. This gets into a whole other field, which is Asian male found whole, essentially beat up. And, you know, we're saying that he is a victim of Manorville Butcher?
We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was my theory. But,
yeah.
You know, again, it all now needs to be taken with
a new
idea. But I think the most interesting thing is body all the way to the left found on Ocean Parkway, the southernmost body,
westernmost?
Westernmost body was Fire Island Jane Doe,
96. Yep.
The body to the right of that.
Jane Doe number 3.
I.E. Peaches.
Right now Peaches.
97. Actually, but she wasn't. But 97 in Hempstead.
97 in Hempstead.
And then gets to the point if you believe that those body parts have been there all along.
Right, which is the other big thing that we need to know. And that's what we really want to know from law enforcement.
Which I believe that.
Well, but based upon what?
Feelings.
Okay, feelings.
Just feeling, you know, the song, feelings. Well, you got to go with your gut. That's what the Oprah says. Intuition, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. So, again, we're still realizing the implications just now of all these things that we're
talking
about.
Yeah, we've been talking through it all day today.
I think, didn't we just find out 3 hours ago?
No, earlier than that.
When?
About noon.
Oh, I didn't even know. I didn't. 11? Yeah, well, not until the Suffolk County Police not until the Nassau County Police Department confirmed it.
Yeah, with Todd. With Todd Matthews.
Oh, by the way, we have the big shout out to Todd Matthews, everybody.
Oh yeah, he's a great guy. From Namath, he's fantastic. He helped a lot of people, and the work he does with Namath is phenomenal. Josh and Rachel, I have one more question. This is what everybody's been asking me, asking on Web Sleuth. You hear it wherever you go. What about season 2 of The Killing Season on A&E? What is going on?
We don't know. We don't know. It's tough. We don't know. We're not going to know until our ratings come in or we get a break in the case or something like that. So, I love all the support, but we just don't know.
Well, you can only do so much, so we'll keep our fingers crossed because there certainly needs to be a season 2. There's plenty still to talk about and to reveal. And on behalf of Web Sleuth, Josh and Rachel, thank you for everything that you've done. We're not going to stop. This isn't going to stop the discussion or stop the work. We're still keeping The Killing Season on Web Sleuth. We'll still have all the discussions. We'll have you back on, Josh and Rachel, when need be. It's still going forward, right?
I think we're going to be finding things out all week, next week. You know, I think the goal was always to have exactly what happened here today. This wasn't necessarily us. You know what I'm saying? This was put in place by numerous people, a lot of people we spoke to today a long time ago. So, this conversation is going to continue. But what I can tell you is the best way for us to get another show is for more of you guys out there to uncover more information, because it will get us that close. So we want another season. It's time to start investigating.
And also tweet to @ANETV.com with hashtag we want killing season two.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Oh, guys, thank you so much. It was a great show tonight. We'll have you on again real soon. Thanks to Bessie. She did all the heavy lifting tonight.
Taking the callers and screening.
Thank you, Bessie. And we'll be in touch. Great news. Great news about Peaches and the toddler. I mean, it's just, wow. It is one of those moments that you just want to jump up and scream. That's fantastic. So we'll be in touch, okay?
Take care. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye now. Hey, everybody, Web Sleuth Radio will be back next Tuesday, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern. We'll have all kinds of different guests on for you. So keep this number handy if you ever want to call in. It's 713-955-0606. My name is Tricia Griffith on behalf of WebSleuth.com and everybody at Web Sleuth. Thanks for tuning in, and be safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.